You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
In the beginning, there was darkness. Then, out of the void, came fire, smoke, Rodo. Fantasy excellence begins here.
This is your time.
The Rodo Experts in the Morning starts now.
It is Wednesday, June the 7th, 2017, and this is the Roto Experts in the Morning, alongside the fantasy executive, Corey Parson.
That's me.
The king, Scott Angle. Okay. Right. And CCM Baseball's Matt Modica. All right, I am Greg Sussman. I thought people would follow your lead.
Oh, yeah, and give a little introduction.
And like, hey.
Hey. All right, so listen up, Greg. I saw Herb Williams this morning leaving the hotel.
The former Indiana Pacer and Knick coach?
Yes, that Herb Williams right there. So he's walking towards the street towards Madison Square Garden.
Going to work.
But there's a young lady sitting in Rock and Raleigh's right now. She's a basketball player.
Oh, that was what you were trying to tell us when you walked in.
Yes, yeah, a young lady. Would you ever date an NBA, WNBA player?
Sure.
Yeah, me too.
I would, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, why not?
I'd be interested.
A little tall, but
does she want to come in? Did you ask her?
No, I didn't ask her. She's just waking up. You know what I'm saying? And then I don't know what team she played for. I don't know how
probably
she...
Probably the team that was here yesterday. You saw the old line.
The Atlanta Dream was here yesterday.
The Atlanta Dream.
Is Herb Williams a WNBA coach?
He might be a part of Liberty now. Yeah. James Dolan loves him.
Yeah, so... She's sitting in the lobby. I mean, she's sitting in the hotel or whatever. So I just wanted to know. Scott, would you ever date an NBA? I mean, well, I know you date an NBA player. Would you ever date a WNBA player?
Herb Williams is an assistant coach, as I said, with Liberty. So,
okay,
so there you go.
I wouldn't.
No, you wouldn't date? No. Oh, well, you're married, yeah.
No, because I only have eyes for you, honey.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Matty Moe, if you wasn't married, WNBA, you know?
Sure, I don't know how to discriminate. I appreciate it.
There you go right there.
There you go.
Nobody.
I was just messing around. I would. I used to think Rebecca Lobo was all right looking.
Oh, it's Maya Moore. It's plenty of cuties in the WNBA. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that I just was thinking, because I'm single, you know what I mean? So I was like, I might see if I can get with a basketball player.
Well, again, to bring it later on the
show. I wasn't going
to
go down. Honestly.
Later on the show, we can talk about the Dream and the Liberty.
Yeah.
When is that game?
I assume they're playing either last night or tonight they played, right?
So you would be a groupie, Corey?
No, I wouldn't be like, I'm not going to go out there and show her some leg. I'm not going to do that.
leg.
They play the Liberty today at 11 a.m. Going very soon.
They played this morning?
They play in 3 hours from now.
Why the hell are they playing this morning? WNBA got problems. They got to play their games at 11 o'clock.
Well, tonight is the finals, right?
Yeah. So
Billy Joel the Garden tonight?
We have to do
the pregame show.
No, we have to do clean the arena like at 1 o'clock. So be done.
That's not nice.
Pretty terribly mean.
Yeah, that was mean, Scott. You was like, Harvin played.
You said they're playing at 11 a.m. They got problems.
Well, the WNBA does is in the red. WNBA doesn't make a penny.
It's the NBA write-off.
Could be Billy Joel there tonight. Who knows?
Oh, yeah, Billy Joel could be at the Garden tonight.
I'm just saying.
You going?
He's got a residency there.
When we come back, a lot of football to get to, some baseball as well. This is the Roto Experts in the Morning, rocking and rolling on a Wednesday here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
One, no, we didn't start the fire. I like this one.
Paying out.
Always burn. It's just the world been turning.
What we got, Greg?
I can say a lot of that. I can actually sing a lot of the words of the song.
Go ahead.
No, man.
It's good too, man.
It is good too. I agree with you. So, it's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. This is the Roto Experts in the Morning. And I want to talk to the Jet fan in the room.
Oh, that's Scott.
That's Scott.
Where? You mean the one where you can kiss my Rick Meyer jersey wearing ass?
Yeah. I don't see Rick Meyer jersey. I'm just kidding, Scott.
Willie Joe Namath.
I'm just kidding. Anyway, yeah. I do want to start here with the Jets, because I thought that was really the story coming into today, was the Jets embracing the tank. They are going all in on tanking and losing, which, to be honest with you, I admire. You basically, they cut their starting inside linebacker, who's been there for 11 years. They're about to cut their best wide receiver. They traded away their best safety, you know, outside the rookie, right? Like, they are doing...
Mangold's gone, too.
They didn't sign any quarterback that's any good. They didn't try to, right? They got rid of Brandon Marshall. This team is doing everything they can to not spend money and to lose. Does this bother anybody?
Not at all. I mean, look what the Padres are doing in baseball. Embrace the suck, pretty much. I mean, for the Jets, what were they going to do this year anyway? I mean, I've been seeing some really bad takes on Twitter, like, oh, yeah, the Jets could be 1-1 in the draft next year. Yeah, obviously. This is what they're doing. This is the right game plan for them. I mean, you don't want to get the sixth pick next year. You want to get the first pick, especially with, you know, the USC quarterback coming out.
Sam Darnold.
Yes, everybody's pretty much really racing. It's an arms race to be as bad as possible to acquire him with the first pick in the draft next year.
The team is basically cleaning house and getting rid of everything from the previous regime that had talent on paper but was very disappointing, underachieving, injured, etc. And they're just clearing the path to start over. And it may be a slow process where on the field you're not going to see a lot of apparent progress in 2017, but there's going to be a lot of young players. They're going to audition them, etc., and, you know, see what happens here. It'll be a chance for the Robbie Andersons to step up and see what they can do. And there are sometimes, this is where, you know, we did a piece on deep sleepers yesterday. This is sometimes where you just see a collection of names that you don't know, and you can't figure everybody's garbage. Somebody's going to step up and have to make plays here. Somebody's going to have to step up in that receiving core, besides maybe a Newell or Anderson that we're not talking about at all, that maybe we might be talking about in September or October.
Scott, you brought the point that they are getting rid of everybody in the previous regime. I mean, that's just not totally true. I mean, they're getting rid of everybody. This regime, last regime, two regimes, yeah, right? Like, they're clearing house of salary and of talent. They want it bare. Corey, Jets GM Mike Maccagnan was asked point blank yesterday if he is tanking the season so the Jets can get the number one pick next year. He said, quote, well, that's not our focus. That is not a no. He did not say no.
He has to say that.
Yeah, but he didn't say no.
He didn't say no.
This is not our focus. Their focus is to lose.
Yeah, nah, they're like, oh, that's not our focus, but that really is saying, oh, no, well, you know, if we win, yeah, that'd be cool with us, you know, but more than likely we are going to lose. And that's what the situation is going to be for the New York Jets. We knew that since the offseason that it was going to be this continued purge. We were talking yesterday on the Fantasy Football Frenzy, me and the spitting statistician, before the news broke, how we didn't think that Eric Decker was going to be a New York Jet when the season started. Right after the show, they play the final music, and I get an alert, New York Jets getting ready to either release or trade Eric Decker. So, obviously, Quincy and Newman, Robbie Anderson, players like that. The young man from Ohio State is a guy that could be a little bit of a deep sleeper. Maybe a dollar make you holler on Devin Smith a little bit later on in your draft. But Bilal Powell's a player I'm still going to have some couple of shares of.
Didn't Devin Smith already tear his ACL? He's done for the year.
He did?
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe so.
Devin Smith's done for the year, man.
The Jets stink.
Well, yeah. Why don't we be so Jets? Is if the kid
when
decides
did he tear his ACL?
If the kid decides to stay in school for an extra year, like Peyton Manning kind of did.
April 29th, it was really towards ACL. Wow. So
I'm sorry, it's not going to be him. No sleeper value there.
No, but the fact is, and I don't know why this surprises me. I mean, certain teams do this, right? The Cleveland Browns have done this, and probably about a decade too late, tearing it onto the ground. But it's very rare, I think, that a team outright tears everything apart like this to build it back up again.
Especially in this market, too.
Well, that was exactly what I was getting to, right? Like, I have no issue when the Knicks do it, because the Knicks have done everything they can to put Band-Aids on it, and they needed to tear it to the ground. They still haven't.
They need to. The Jets in football, it just seems a little bit different to me, I think. I just don't get why it has had to come to this, how the talent got so bare and how it got so bad that they had to do this, you know? I mean, it seems like a couple of years ago, obviously it's significantly more now, where Mark Sanchez had him in the AFC title game a couple of years in a row, right? Like, it doesn't seem that long ago, but it was.
Probably 6 years ago now,
right, it's close to 10 years ago already, which is crazy. And they either haven't drafted well, they haven't signed well. Clearly,
there's been a lot of personnel mistakes. There's been injuries, too.
Well, you know what? I think it all stems from two major things, right? They stuck with Rex too long, probably. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It ultimately stuck with Rex too long, and they could not find a quarterback. When you can't find a quarterback, it turns everybody off. And unfortunately, that's the state of the Jets right now, who legitimately have admitted, although it's not their focus for the first overall pick, they don't give a crap about this year.
Do they score 20 offensive touchdowns this year?
I have to imagine they do.
It's going to be close, in my opinion.
By the end of this week, will Matt Forte be on the team?
I don't see why he would. I just really don't.
I can see them getting rid of him.
Wow.
Yeah. And you talk about the quarterback situation, et cetera. You know, it goes back to scouting. Like, the Cowboys come up with a gem like Dak Prescott, and the Jets come up with, Christian Hackenberger.
Yeah,
Hackenberger, huh?
Yeah.
Last year, the Los Angeles Rams scored 24 touchdowns.
24 offensive or 24 touchdowns total? I'm talking about offensive touchdowns.
I think Los Angeles, there's 24 offensive touchdowns for the Los Angeles Rams last year. Last year, the Jets scored 28.
They scored 28 last year.
They might score 19.
That's what I'm saying.
Points for the season?
If I put it at 19.5, how confident are you going to bet the over?
Wow.
I can't confidently bet
the over.
This is
offensive. We're not talking defense, special teams.
I don't know.
It'd be a lot of field goals, I think.
The Falcons scored 63. It's crazy.
Falcons are good.
Yeah.
Do you...
But didn't... I'm in
the Seahawks score. Hold on. I'm in the Seahawks score. The Seahawks scored 37. You know, the choir boy Russell Wilson probably scored all 37.
Corey, do you expect Matt Forte to be on this team next week?
Yeah, I don't think. Why cut Matt Forte? He's not... You can't win with Matt Forte at this point in his career.
Why cut Eric Decker?
Well, Eric Decker still has some value to another team.
I imagine Matt Forte has some sort of value.
He does. What's he going to do for the Jets, really?
Exactly.
Well, that's true, too, but the Jets probably want players that's not going to do nothing for them. Matt Forte, who's going to take Matt Forte?
Somebody will, right?
Really?
Yeah.
Matt Forte beat up Washington.
There was a team the other day I was thinking that was kind of running back needy. I'm trying to jog my memory on who it is.
Seahawks.
I'll get back to you on who it is.
Why did the Jets say we're going to release or trade? You know, either attempt to make the trade, or by releasing him, they're saving enough under the... It's a better cap move for them, I would have to assume.
Sure.
So I just don't understand why you come out.
Could the Lions use a Matt Forte?
Sure.
Yeah.
Could the Bucks use a Matt Forte?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I think Jaquizz Rodgers is better than Matt Forte.
Could the Giants use a Matt Forte? Yes.
Jaquizz Rodgers.
They ain't gonna give him the ball.
Feature back over an extensive period.
He had a game last year. We have 35 carries.
I know. He had one, two good games, but you can't expect him to do it for.
He's going to be
five,
the starting quarterback
games.
For the Tampa Bay Buccaneers this year. He's going to be the starting running back for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and they're going to score over 50 touchdowns.
He's not going to do it over a full time basis.
I'll draft him and I'll win chip, and then you don't have him, and then you wonder why you don't win chips, and then you go right there.
You only take a 5'6", 150-pound guy and expect him to be like the full-time running back from wire to wire. It's not going
to
happen. The guy did have some good games last year, but they, you know, when they were desperate because everybody got hurt, by the end of that second game, he was completely worn out and he got hurt.
Now, I think you're sleeping on Jaquizz Rodgers, Scott.
He's too small.
I don't have no problem with him, and he's going very late in drafts right now. He's going to be the starting back for the first 3 or 4 weeks of the season while Doug Martin is out. I don't think he gives the job back.
I think both of you are kind of right in a way. I think I like him better than Scott's saying, but I do think Scott is right in the fact that they can't just abuse him. Like, they gave him that 30 carries last year on Monday Night Football. If he's used in the proper way, I think he can be successful. And I think they want to throw the ball more.
You get him in the 17th round, well, you did fine, but... guy can't start over an extended period.
He'll be in the 10th round by the time we get to September.
By the way, let's not forget Robbie Anderson is facing two charges. Felony resisting an officer with violence and a misdemeanor count of obstructing an officer. Let's not forget that. Yeah, it's not great. Take a break. Come back. Roto Experts in the Morning continues after this. This is the Roto Experts of the Morning here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. A couple of more Jets notes for you before we move on.
Oh, no.
It was reported by Kim Jones last night.
Oh, I like Kim Jones.
Kim Jones reported that the Jets reached out to Steve Smith to see if he wants to play this season.
Well, they're going to cut him,
they
too?
They cut Decker, but they reached out to Smith.
Yes.
Ice up, son.
This makes little sense. This is a remote world. This makes little sense, but Steve Smith Sr. confirmed that it was true. I don't get it.
You sure they wanted to be the wide receivers coach?
No, I'm positive they wanted him to play. Eric Decker's officially been cleared, so if he signs with somebody, that's cool. Former, this is all Jets notes, all Jets related here. Former Jets coach Rex Ryan has been accused of assault stemming from the bar fight that we saw in Nashville last weekend when he was wearing that Bryce Harper jersey.
Yeah.
So that's hilarious.
You know what? The Ryan brothers out there fighting in Nashville.
Grab somebody's foot.
Huh?
You grab somebody's
foot. Oh, boy. You know, like, I get it a little bit because they're like NFL guys, been around players, locker rooms and stuff like that their whole life, so they don't mind mixing it up. But come on, dog. What the hell are y'all doing? These two big fat brothers out there pummeling on frat boys. You know what I mean? Like, what the hell is going on with the Ryans? Buddy, please, buddy. Bless your soul, buddy. Come on now. Get your boys.
You love Buddy.
I love Buddy. I love Rex. I don't like Rob.
You don't like Rob.
There you go, man. I don't like Rob because Rob was the worst offense defensive coordinator.
Yeah, he's terrible.
He's horrible,
and he keeps getting jobs. Like, I don't
because his last name is Ryan.
Yeah.
I thought Rex was a really good coordinator.
He looks unique on camera.
He does look unique on camera with the big belly and the long hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He doesn't look great on camera, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't think
he doesn't look great.
He says, well, Rex, I said Rex unique. Looks
better. I said unique. Oh, okay. He's certainly distinctive.
Rex had the surgery, though.
He did.
He had the surgery.
And then he was just like, then he like reversed the surgery.
he said, I gotta be me.
Put it back. Oh, yeah, what are you doing to you? Look at Jeff. Jeff's a skeleton. You think Jeff worry about eating? No.
No.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody's feeding Jeff. Yeah.
All right, I wanted to chat. Now, we talked about a lot of the wide receivers and rookie running backs over the past week or two. I wanted to get into some of these rookie tight ends as well. Because
let's do it.
Rookie tight ends, the old theory, the old mantra goes, they do nothing in year number one. They are not fantasy relevant because so often in college, they're not asked to do it all. You're asked to be a receiver, you're asked to be a blocker, you're not asked to do it all. So it's the toughest transitions, or so the thought goes. So when it comes to fantasy, we don't really draft rookie tight ends. And what we've been doing here is looking back at last year's rookies at the position in order to look forward at this year's rookies at the position.
Got to go back before you go forward.
That's how we've been kind of doing this through the past week. So I wanted to get to last year's tight ends.
All right, like who we got, Greg?
You tell me.
Hunter Henry.
There you go. So Hunter Henry, by far, was the best rookie tight end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had eight touchdowns.
He played receiver in college, right?
He did.
Yeah.
We had eight touchdowns last year. We've spoken about that quite a bit, I'd say. But he only had 36 catches for 478 yards. He obviously split time with Antonio Gates. And I think we all see a pretty bright future here for Hunter Henry at the tight end position. Maybe not this year where Gates is still there. But ultimately, we see a bright future coming for Hunter Henry. Fine. The next best tight end is someone that we talked about over the last 2 days. That was Austin Hooper.
My man.
Okay.
Mr. Hooper.
Austin Hooper's total line was 19 receptions, 271 yards, and 3 touchdowns.
Not great.
Not great. Does anyone have any idea who the next best tight end was as a rookie?
The next best tight end is
only because there were three tight end rookie tight ends taken in the first round this year. Three of them. So I wanted to do the top three last year for rookies. I've named Henry. I've named Hooper. Can you name who is statistically ranked third?
Is it Higbee?
Tyler Higbee was ranked tied for fourth as he had 11 receptions last year for 85 yards and a touchdown.
Yeah, I only went with him because I know Hooper had 19. So.
Sure.
Make America Great Again. Was he a rookie?
He was not a rookie. He was not a rookie. Second year player. I'm going to tell you because there's no chance in hell you're going to get it.
It's not CJ?
It is not. CJ Fedorkiewicz? As one would say. CJ Fedorowicz, obviously.
CJ Fedorowicz.
Fedorkowicz is the host of Sagan and Angle, I'll tell you.
AJ Derby?
No, not AJ Derby. You're not going to get it. I'm just going to tell you. It's Jarrell Adams of the New York Giants. Right. Okay. Jarrell Adams, third string tight end. He had 16 receptions for 122 yards and a touchdown.
Yep. Nothing really good to see when it comes to rookie tight ends.
Nothing. So basically, this mantra held true. Even for Hunter Henry, he went on that run where he scored all these touchdowns, caught all these passes, and that was it. Right, he got concussed, Antonio Gates came back, and, you know, wipe your hands clean of Hunter Henry. He's never reliable. Maybe in 2017 it gets better, maybe not. Hunter Henry's a discussion for a different day. I wanted to talk about the rookie tight
end. Question, though, before we go forward. Who is, I don't know this off the top of my head, who is the last rookie tight end that hit?
Gronk.
What year was that?
2010?
Did he hit, though?
I think he did. Well, I mean, you could.
Are we sure about that?
Could you? No. Okay, so. He had 42. In his rookie year, he had 42 receptions, 546 yards, and 10 touchdowns.
Yeah,
and
he hit.
That's hitting. Aaron Hernandez, the same year, had 45 for 563 and 6. I mean, you could say Hunter Henry hit. Like, I'm fine with that. He only had 36 receptions. But you could say he hit. That's fine. But the point being, that same year, by the way, Jermaine Gresham had 52 catches, 471, and 4. It was also his rookie year. Nevertheless.
He can play. He just stuck in Arizona.
Jermaine Gresham?
Yeah.
Yeah, he can play. But that's not the point of the conversation.
Yeah, no doubt.
The point is, as a rookie, it is very hard to be successful. There are three rookie tight ends this year in the NFL that people are going to talk about when it comes to fantasy drafts. Let's talk about the top one, right?
Yep.
Talk about the one Corey has said repeatedly, this guy's going to hit.
He's going to hit. O.J. Howard is going to hit.
This guy's going to hit is what he said to us.
O.J. Howard is going to hit. He's in a fantasy-friendly offense. They went out there and got him. They're going to scheme it up. Jameis Winston, outstanding pieces on the offense. An inline tight end that can block, and he's also a move tight end. He can get down the field. He's a matchup nightmare. He's going to finish this season as a tight end one. I'm not worried about Cameron Brate. I think Cameron Brate still be in the mix, but O.J. Howard is the man. O.J. Howard is a future NFL Hall of Famer.
That's a massive statement.
There you go. It came from the mouth of the dick. Goes young lady right there. It came from the mouth. She's tall. It came from the mouth of the fantasy executive. O.J. Howard is going to hit. He is going. The what they're talking about was coming out of the OTAs, and we'll start hearing more as training camp gets close. This guy is good. He's a matchup nightmare. He's in the right system that fits him up. Dirt Cutter is going to try to scheme it up and have him do the kind of things that he had Tony Gonzalez do when he had Tony G in Atlanta. I'm telling you, I'm in the Draft Champions just right now, right? I'm in Draft Champions in the NFFC. I left Kobe Fleener on the board, right?
Yep.
I left Jason Witten on the board. I left Fedorowicz on the board. I left Gates on the board. I left Brate on the board. All of them. I got O.J. Howard. O.J. Howard's a player to have in 2017. I understand rookie tight ends don't hit. I could have egg on my face later on this year, but I seriously doubt it. If you want to get on board with the fantasy executive, I'm telling you, get yourself some O.J. Howard this year.
Let me go to Scotty here, because Scotty, you have traditionally been conservative when drafting.
Very conservative.
You've always been someone to me that said, listen, I want to see it before I commit a draft pick to it. You're somebody that, listen, the rookie tight ends, we all know it's a thing. You've talked to me about it one-on-one before, about the ineffectiveness of rookie tight ends. It's been, what, 7 years since we found one that truly hit, outside of really Hunter Henry last year. O.J.
Football Focus has a list of the 10 best tight ends over the last decade, but you got to be a subscriber. So
O.J. Howard.
No, but they said Jordan Reed and Dwayne Allen. I can see those had pretty good rookie years.
Okay.
Dwayne Allen, I don't know.
I can look it up as you're talking. Yeah. But anyway, the point is, given where you are as a drafter, as an expert, O.J. Howard's a first-round pick in a fantasy-friendly offense, as Corey described. But there's other pieces there. They're obviously, he's Mike Evans. They signed DeSean Jackson. And O.J. Howard came from, you know, Alabama, where, let's be honest, outside of the two national championship games, he didn't do all that much offensively. He's extremely talented, hell of a blocker, and showed in those national championship games he could certainly catch the ball and run after the catch. But ultimately, through his time in Alabama, he didn't do all that much. So, as a drafter, as you being the king, where do you feel comfortable taking O.J. Howard, if at all?
I don't. Look, the guy's got all the talent, and, you know, that's, you know, that's something that we have to give to him before he even steps in the league. But like you said, there are proven options over there. There's Evans. There's Jackson. You know, they even have Adam Humphries in the slot. And, you know, they're going to throw the ball out of the backfield a little bit, too. It's just, you know, for me to invest heavily in a rookie, as talented as he is, before he even steps foot, you know, on an NFL field, it's not something I have total confidence in doing as my tight end one. I would like more to, like, for him to be like the 13th, 14th guy off the board. If I'm going to take a second tight end, you know, and go with the upside, yes, but I'd rather have a proven guy as my starting tight end. I can't.
Who's proven?
I can't do that just right away.
Which is what I expected you to say here. I expected you to not be able to just go all in on this, kind of like Corey has. And that was kind of the opposite approach.
I'll give a guy that I'll take over.
Jimmy Graham, Jack Doyle.
I mean, Jack Doyle to me is a guy that I'm going to take. I think Jack Doyle can do really good things this season.
So you know how I feel about Jack Doyle. We talked about this last week. The three of us sat here like, we all like Jack Doyle. Fabulous season. Matt is totally on the nose right there. And Corey, you're on the other end of Jack Doyle. Not that you hate him, but you're like, Eric Swoop, you're going to be pissed off.
Eric Swoop. Eric Swoop is going to be involved. Eric Swoop is going to be in the plans. Eric Swoop is going to be a guy that's going to come out there in week one. He's going to have two touchdowns, and everybody be like, oh my God, I got Jack Doyle.
Cameron Brate's going to be in the picture in Tampa Bay.
This is a different offense, though. This is a different offense. And nobody, Jack Doyle, no Eric Swoop is nowhere near as talented as O.J. Howard. See, so that's my thing. Now, 59 receptions last year, 584 yards, 5 touchdowns. That's decent. O.J. Howard will match that, probably better that this year.
Jack Doyle, I think, will probably be one of the best tight end values we're going to get.
I'm with Corey on the upside.
But still,
before a guy sets foot on the field, at
scared
a
money
tough,
don't make money.
At a tough
he's a future
a
all pro, no doubt about that.
But
I have
the
no
first year,
about.
I can't draft him as my tight end one.
Be bold like the fantasy executive. Put him in your starting lineup.
We'll come back. We'll talk more O.J. Howard, more rookie tight ends on the other side. This is the Roto Experts in the Morning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. O.J. Howard is going to be a controversial name at this table, at least for the next few months, as we try to figure out what to make of him, how to rely on him. Corey Parson believes he's a tight end one right now.
Right now.
Right this second.
Tight end one right now.
So he's in your top 12 as of
He's in your top 12 right now.
He's in my top 12 right now.
What is your rank?
Hold on one second. I got to pull it up. I think he might be 12. Hold on a second.
That is top 12.
Yeah. Somebody else talk while I pull this up.
I mean, I could make a case to put him as high as 13. Mm-hmm. I think after, like, say, 15 sounds about right to me for him.
I agree.
You know, look, he's the guy that if at the right price, if you have, you say you waited on tight end, you have somebody that you don't feel so comfortable
with. I agree with that.
And you want to take another tight end? Yeah, I'm all for
that. Are you cool? So would you pair Jack Doyle and O.J. Howard?
Sure. I mean, if I could pull that off, that sounds like something that's really
that sounds
good
cool.
to me.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I really think Jack Doyle is going to have a really good season. And I agree with Corey on pretty much a lot of the things he said about Howard. This is you know, a truly talented kid. He stayed an extra year. He proved, you know, he could block. He was in a system that was not going to highlight his offensive talent.
Exactly.
We all know that.
Yep. One thing that scares me about Jack Doyle, and, you know, I've
talking about Howard.
We were also talking about Doyle, okay, if you were following.
I know, but Madika was talking.
Not looking up WNBA rosters. But,
she was a cutie. Tall, but whatever.
Anyway, when was the last time we had a dependable tight end in Indianapolis?
Never.
It's always been a two tight end set.
You just told me Dwayne Allen had a great rookie year.
What was homeboy name?
No, I was saying he had a good tight year for a rookie.
By the way, that year was 45 receptions, 521, and 3.
Yeah, that's 3 touchdowns.
Yeah. OJ Howard is going to double that. Well, he's not going to catch 90 balls, you know what I'm saying? What was the tight end that Peyton Manning threw to in Indianapolis? What was his name?
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
A little stocky dude.
Dallas Clark.
Dallas Clark, yeah. So, yeah.
That was the last one.
That was the last one.
And by the, and yeah. by the way,
they've run a lot of two tight end sets in the Andrew Luck year.
To answer, your next question, Scotty, about Jordan Reed, his rookie year was 45 receptions for 499 yards and three.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nothing spectacular here. So my tight ends.
A better year was had by Tim Wright in Tampa.
There you go.
Rutgers player. 571 and five.
Travis Kelce, Jordan Reed, Gronk. That's the first tier. Then I got Jimmy Graham, Greg Olsen, Delanie Walker, Eric Ebron, Marty B., Tyler Eifert, Kyle Rudolph, who I can't stand.
Love him.
Zach Ertz, and then my son OJ Howard.
So where is he ranked? What number is that?
Number 12.
Where's Jack Doyle? 12.
Jack Doyle is
Scott, scroll down the list.
Is 14.
Oh.
Well, I'm gonna take the point of view that Jack Doyle is only going to improve. The guy catches the ball, his catch percentage is pretty much almost 80%. I think he does have a rapport with Andrew Luck. My biggest concern is I want to start seeing Andrew Luck throwing the ball sooner than later. Mm-hmm. I don't like the fact that, you know, he might miss some parts of preseason, possibly miss all of preseason. That's just not something I want to hear from a guy who's probably going to throw the ball close to 700 times. You know, you have to consider that. But I think this is a perfect spot for Dallas. But I think Jack Doyle's in a really good situation. And I think he has that rapport with his quarterback. And I think he will be an end zone threat this season.
There's O.J. Howard. And there's Jack Doyle. But what about the other rookie tight ends that were drafted in the first round? These aren't like middle round tight ends that were taking a shot on, like the Gerald Everett, as I mentioned yesterday. These are first round guys. You talk about a pass happy offense. Evan Ingram was the next tight end draft, the second tight end in the draft. He's drafted by the New York Giants. And this is an offense where I just joked about Matt Forte, you know, getting cut and signing in New York or staying in New York with the other team. This is a guy that's in and Corey said, listen, they're not going to run the ball at all. They're going to pass. Odell Beckham, Brandon Marshall, Sterling Shepard, Evan Ingram. He is a weapon. He's someone that barely played on the line in college, but certainly could catch the football. Corey,
yo,
you were the high guy on O.J. Howard, yeah, the rookie. I know Scott is not going to like this guy just given he's never seen him before, right? Like, yeah, he's just never seen him. He's got to do it before. He's got to see it to believe it type thing. So, Corey, let me go to you. You believe in O.J. Howard more than anybody at this table.
Yep.
Do you believe in Evan Ingram as well?
No, I do not believe in Evan Ingram. I think Odell Beckham. It's too many pieces. It's too many weapons.
Can't you say the same thing in Tampa?
Huh?
You say the same thing in Tampa.
Yeah, but it's no. But it's Tampa. They want to scheme the tight end into it. The tight end is going to be a part
same
of what they
the
do.
Giants.
I don't think so. I think it's going to be the. I think it's going to be more focused on the wide receivers. They're not going to be able to run the football. And then I don't like the fact that this kid is a move tight end.
Mm-hmm.
The Giants need help on the offensive line. That is a real thing.
Absolutely.
You can't have a tight end out there running out into routes and Eli Manning getting his head knocked off. So I don't think a move tight end is not going to work for the Giants in their offense. I think he will develop into a special player at some point. I'm not getting involved this year. Not the talent that Howard has, and I like Howard's situation better.
Howard is more talented. I do worry about Brait being in that mix, though, there, and the other pieces they have. It's escaping me. The Giant tight end of scored.
Evan Ingram.
Larry Donnell.
Larry Donnell. You've seen that the Giants really do under Eli like to incorporate the tight end.
Totally.
Now, I said about O.J. Howard, I can't make him my starter because he's a rookie and he's got to prove it. I can take the same stance on Ingram, even though he's less talented than Howard, because I've seen the Giants feature the tight end. I've seen Eli Manning go to the tight end in the red zone, so he's not a guy that I want to take as my number one, but I'll take him as a number two because there's some sleeper potential there for some touchdowns, I think.
Scotty, if Cameron Brait wasn't in Tampa, would O.J. Howard be in your top 12?
I haven't done my ranks yet,
right,
but I'm much stronger considering.
Okay, so Cameron Brait is really one of the major reasons for you.
It's one of the reasons.
Okay.
It's one of the reasons, but you look at Ingram, there's who else are they going to throw to?
There's no one there.
Will Ty is the guy I think they throw to because, okay, he's there. Let's throw to
him.
The only
other guy is Rhett Ellison, who they signed in a free agent contract. I mean, they went out and got this guy.
I watched Rhett Ellison in Minnesota.
Well, Ellison's
not really
a blocking
pass catcher.
So
that's what Corey's talking about. To Corey's point,
away.
You can have you can run a two tight end set, and you can have Ellison block, and you can send Ingram out in the passing game.
I'm going to piggyback on Scott's point because I think he made an excellent point, which I was going to go to. I think Eli does really like to go to the tight end.
Especially up to see him.
Yeah, and in the end zone as well, when they get in that red zone. I think that's, this is a feature that I think can help him a lot. So Ingram and Joku are guys in the last couple of rounds that, yeah, I'll take a flyer on either one of those guys. I mean, the supreme talent is the guy in Cleveland, and Joku. That kid, he's, what, 20 years old? And he has a vast ceiling. I mean, but I don't think it's going to happen this year, especially the quarterback situation. You know, he's got to learn. But Ingram here, yeah, late, very late. I totally agree with what Scott says. He's a guy that I will look to take a shot on. And if after a couple of weeks I got to cut him, I'll cut him. Or I'll keep him on a watch list.
There you go. Round 19, dollar make your holler type guy. You know what I'm saying? If you're getting some tight end trouble during the season and Ingram is out there and you're a little bit ahead of your league mates, I don't mind it. But I would tip up my expectations when it comes to Evan Ingram.
But I think this just makes the case that how deep I think the top 12 tight ends are. I mean, there's guys like, people love
much
Eric
more
Ebron
than
this past week.
Oh,
this season.
Yeah.
He's like the breakout guy.
I love
a lot
Ebron.
Of people.
Yep. I'm but feeling
like,
Ebron.
Like in past seasons, like good point by Matt. You know, you could say, oh, man, there's maybe like 5-6 tight ends. Now it goes deeper over the last 2 years.
Well, it goes deeper because
but
they're all so mediocre.
Them still suck, though. Yeah.
I said the same thing last year.
Look, I think there's actually some good players there. I mean, I
feel it's deeper over the last 2 years.
I really like, I mean, seasons. A guy like Kyle Rudolph, I think it's a perfect situation. If you're playing in two quarterback league, a guy like post-20th rank, Sam Bradford actually has a pretty damn good receiving core this year. He's got Diggs, he's got Thielen, he's got Rudolph, and I like the...
Laquan Treadwell.
Well, you know, ooh. I mean, he's got Michael Floyd, who might be there. But, I mean, look at the running back situation. Look at that upgrade. So, I mean, in a two-quarterback league, if you end up with Sam Bradford, I think you might be pleasantly surprised.
Two-quarterback league, Sam Bradford, an interesting pick. Now, there was one more first-round tight end, and that was... Yes, Corey?
I wanted to say right quick before you get to Njoku.
Yep.
Eric Ebron in 12 games last year caught 65 passes. He played 16. He's going to catch 80.
Bottom line. He's
a part of the offense.
That's not the bottom line. The bottom line is he's not going to play 16 games.
Be patient with him. Be patient with him.
Who do they have there? They got, at wide receiver, they got Tate. Right.
They got that bum Marvin Jones.
Right.
Theoretically, you have to count.
Yeah, you got to count Theo Riddick. They probably have Decker or, you know what I'm saying?
Decker or
Mac.
You laid out
like
something, all right?
Something.
You have Golden Tate as an excellent mover of the change. You got that bum Marvin Jones. You got Theo Riddick to throw out of the backfield. Who do they throw down to the seam in the end zone? It's Ebron.
Yeah, it's Ebron.
Yeah.
Ebron's got to stay on the
field.
He
plays that role. Well, I'm saying when he's healthy, he plays that role.
It's a big thing. Many of these tight ends, of course, that's the thing. Now, first round pick, the last tight end, that was Cleveland Browns tight end, David Njoku. Now, I know how Scott feels. This guy's not going to be anywhere near his team, because not only is he a rookie tight end, but he plays for the Cleveland Browns.
Cody Kessler, boo-boo-hoo. Cody Kessler, stop it. My God.
Isaiah Crowell, MVP.
And then you're going to have him on two or three teams. And then when
I'm
you
not saying I don't like Isaiah
Crowell.
Oh, okay.
Oh, all right. I'm just
but,
saying.
But, you know, it's not like I'm wearing an Isaiah Crowell skirt like you are.
And then, brown and orange.
Corey, any love for David Njoku?
No, I'm not fooling with David Njoku. I think in rookie tight end, I think it's got to be an elite special type talent. So Njoku's not a guy that I think he's going to have a hard time trying to find consistent targets. He can give you some decent touchdown numbers. Maybe a guy you put him in during the flex week, you got bye issues or something like that. A lot of the tight ends stay hurt. So he has some upside in that sense, but more or less a player like another guy like Ingram, a late round draft pick, dollar make you holler, put him on your watch list, see what he's doing. I think that the other pieces in the offense, particularly the running game, is going to be something that the Cleveland Browns will focus on more. My guy Isaiah Crowell, getting him to rock. And then what if Josh Gordon get off suspension? He get reinstated.
Don't
he could be
this.
Back in that. Is he still a thing? All right, okay.
I mean, I have to move
now.
On from Josh Gordon.
I need closure.
You got it. Just accept it.
No, I need him back on my team and we can talk about it.
We're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll go at the park. It's Roto Experts. Scotty, you can talk to Jimmy Nelson when we return here on the Roto Experts in the Morning. We'll pause from the football. We'll get back to Eric Ebron in just a moment on the other side. Also coming up, we'll dive into the Roto Experts Exclusive Edge Package, which is officially 1 week away. It's going to be awesome next Wednesday. All right, With that, we get into Roto Experts at the Park. We get in to Jimmy Nelson. Scotty, you got an opportunity to interview Jimmy Nelson last week.
Yeah, it's Milwaukee Brewers week on Roto Experts at the Park. Listen to all the interviews on demand, Audio Boom, iTunes, Google Play. And I talked to Jimmy Nelson about the fact that in two respects, he's having his best season ever. Career best strikeout rate, 9.09. And right here, I talked to him about his walk rate, which is also a career low, 2.24.
You know, I just got tired of shooting myself in the foot, you know, with all the walks and hit batters. Of course, you're going to hit a guy here and there, walk a guy here and there. But, you know, my goal is to limit those free passes and really make the other team earn it. So just, you know, be in the zone more early and late counts. You know, I feel like I've done a good job of that. Just kind of expand on that, you know, start moving different pitches around within the zone.
Yeah, and he's got a 3.36 ERA, but the FIP is only 3.04. And for those of you Matt Modica followers, the XFIP is 3.40.
Speaking of Matt Modica followers, Matt, you just tweeted out something very, very interesting in regards to Jimmy Nelson.
Yeah. since May 5th, over his last six starts, I mean, in 35 and two-thirds, 42 strikeouts to six walks, a 10.5 K per nine, a 1.5 walks per nine. I mean, the ERA is 177. I'll go back to the XFIP, 233.
And
which isn't that far off here.
No, not at all.
Yeah, you look at these Brewers pitchers, some of them are pitching really well. Chase Anderson with another good start last night. He hasn't allowed a run in his last 21 and two-thirds innings. That's the longest streak for a Brewers pitcher, starting pitcher, dating back to 2007 when Ben Sheets was turning tricks like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, Jimmy Nelson, we talked about him early in April. I ventured in multiple spots, but the next four starts were just, you know, classic Jimmy Nelson. So at the end of April, I got out. Chase Anderson, I got in a couple spots too, and I got out of that one in, what, three straight, seven innings, zero runs, like Scott was saying. I have
zero shares of Chase Anderson. Just not a guy that I saw anything from, and totally wrong, obviously, given the numbers that Scotty just gave you. Of course, he leads you to the win. Corey Knebel gets his sixth save of the year. Is anyone talking to you tomorrow, Corey Knebel?
Tomorrow will be Travis Shaw.
New dad, Travis Shaw. Right?
Yes.
So there you go. Of course, you can listen to all of our interviews at the park with the King, Scott Angle, on demand wherever you listen to us. You can listen to Roto Experts at the park, iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Audio Boom, Stitcher, wherever you listen to the Roto Experts. You can listen to Roto Experts at the park on demand. The full, unfiltered, and there's some good stuff in there, unfiltered, unedited versions, Roto Experts at the park.
I highly recommend the Eric Thames interview.
Well, not the other ones?
No, just I'm saying that really stood out to me, you know, in terms of him analyzing himself, you know, and how he's changed as a hitter.
There you go. The Brewers last night defeated the Giants 5-2, by the way. It was Hernan Perez on my bench getting his seventh home run of the season, frustratingly enough. Well, Keon Broxton is going to hit in a while. He scored two runs yesterday, but he's going to hit in a while.
Did he hit lead off last night?
No. No. He's batted seventh.
They have Sogard lead off again?
Eric Sogard led off last
year. I mean, you have to lead that guy off. He's getting on base.
3.96 the OBP at 5.29.
The prescription is working.
It's ridiculous. Eddie Nunez, 3-for-4 for the Giants. We'll come back. We'll get some baseball headlines on the other side. We'll do more football as well this hour, including the Roto Experts exclusive Edge preview. When we come back, we have some injuries from last night to talk about. We have some new records last night that we need to talk about. Some historical headlines from the MLB when we kick off hour number two next here on the Roto Experts in the morning.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
In the beginning, there was darkness. Then, out of the void, came fire, smoke. Roto. Fantasy excellence begins here.
This is your time.
The Roto Experts in the morning starts now.
Hour number two of the Roto Experts in the morning here at the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Corey, Matt, Scotty over there. Greg Sussman here with you. Of course, at the bottom of this hour,
I'm sitting next to me,
we have Dr. Ray from Inside Injuries here to join us. So look forward to that. And of course, we'll get into the Inside the Roto Experts exclusive Edge package. Do a preview
today. What are we talking about today?
Today on the program, we will go into Brandon Munchison's article in Training Camp Battles.
Okay, all right, cool. So you know,
so one of them we kind of referenced a little bit earlier. I want to get to, and one of them I referenced yesterday. So we'll dive into that in just a little bit. I want to begin hour number two talking about some of the injuries from last night and some of the big headlines from last night in baseball. Of course, Scooter Jeanette, four home runs last night.
Yesterday.
Four homers, 10 ribbies. What a hell of a night for that dude.
Like, he's never hit more than four homers in a month.
Here's the thing that's so crazy about this, right? You know, everybody's like a prisoner at the moment. I was reading on Twitter, this was the greatest offensive performance in Major League Baseball history. And I'm like, can we relax? You know what I'm saying? Like, can we calm down a little bit?
Actually,
turn your microphone on.
Actually, there are numbers to back it up.
So it is the greatest performance in offensive performance in Major League Baseball history.
In terms of the total bases.
It just happened last night by Scooter Jeanette, Scott.
Yeah, in terms of the total bases and the RBIs, it just might be.
But didn't.
That's what I'm being told. So
yeah, I think Reggie Jackson's three home runs in October is a bigger deal than that.
Yeah, look, it was a great night for the guy, and it was a great moment.
It's the biggest night in baseball history.
Wow.
That's
congratulations.
Crazy.
Shout out to Scooter.
Mike Cameron. I think it was a year Sean or two Green. Ago. Even guys that had like three home runs and had like magical nights, like Lonnie Chisenhall that night in Texas.
Oh, sure.
That magical night. Dr. Moto called it.
So there you go. It was 15 years ago already that Mike Cameron had those four home runs against the Chicago White Sox. Other headlines from yesterday, a couple of injuries that we do need to get to here. Ivan Nova left the game early with a knee injury, allowed back-to-back home runs, and then was like, and then Frankie Cervelli was like, we got to get this dude out of here.
Yeah. He did pitch six innings.
But he hurt his knee. And that's an injury. That's something we're going to have to watch. It looked like knee tendonitis. Hopefully nothing, but as we know, Eduardo Rodriguez.
Left knee inflammation.
Sure.
You got to think a 10-day DL is coming.
I would think so, yes. So there you go. That's Ivan Nova's injury. Also, Adrian Beltre jammed his ankle last night. He's already in a walking boot. It has not been a good year for Adrian Beltre.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I think they just, as a Beltre owner, you know what? Let's just put him away in a box and bring him back after the All-Star break. Hopefully he's fully healthy.
Adrian Beltre over the years, Captain Mel, in tremendous, tremendous shape, but he also plays very, very hard. And at this age, you know, it's getting harder to keep up at the kind of intense level he plays at.
You know who also the disabled list yesterday? Yasmani Tomas. Suck it, baby! We're going to come back. Yeah, I got another injury to talk about. A couple of highlighted baseball performances. Stick around. More Roto Experts in the Morning coming your way next. Along with some of the injuries we just mentioned, Jaime Garcia has shockingly not gotten injured. That's like the funny part about all this. Jaime Garcia has been, well, quite the opposite. Over his last four starts, the dude has a 1.23 ERA. He's been fantastic. For a guy that's always injured, he's having also a nice start.
Yeah, no, for the Braves, this is something that they're really welcoming because he's somebody that they can actually flip as a little chip here in the next month or so. The thing always is with Jaime Garcia, will he hold up? I mean, he does have flashes like this. This is not something new. And, you know, he can help a team out. You know, he just needs to take that ball every fifth day.
Yeah, the Braves, what they did was they tried to put a competitive team in there in the first year of a new stadium. But they're all about the future. They have the richest farm system in all of the major leagues. And, you know, they can add another piece to it if they can, unload Garcia before he gets hurt again.
There you go. Jaime Garcia was fantastic last night. 7 2/3, 3 runs, 4 strikeouts, walked nobody, but he wasn't as good as Aaron Nola was. 8 innings, 5 hits, 1 run, he struck out 6. Hector Neris comes on to get the save, and then gets pulled. Yeah, we got the first guy out, a couple of singles. That was it. Brought Pat Neshek, who got the job done. I still think Neris is safe, but Pat Neshek, 0.82 ERA, he's also a candidate to get moved somewhere.
Yeah, and you had 3 different guys getting saves this week for the Phillies, and watching Nola last night, his pitches were really, really moving. Moving in a very encouraging performance. And Odubel Herrera now 4 consecutive games with a double.
With a O-double.
O-double.
Get it right. Get it right.
Very nice.
Touche.
There you go. I've been saving that one up for the right moment there.
Jerkstar.
Gerardo Parra going along with the injuries. He left with a strained quad. He's expected to be placed on the disabled list with this strained quad muscle. Anytime anyone from Colorado gets hurt, it's worth noting, given that they play in Colorado.
And it's a shame because he was on a nice run.
He was.
He was playing really well.
Absolutely was. Now, we talked about the Brewers a little while ago. A former Brewer got paid this morning, as it's official. Jeannie Segura, their former shortstop. You feel good for this guy, given what he's been through, losing with those deaths in the family. I remember Adam Ronis and I talked about it last year, and how this guy's needed to clear his mind that he would be good, and he did in Arizona last year. He traded to Seattle after a fantastic start on the disabled list with that high ankle sprain, and Segura just got paid 5 years, $70 million for him.
And more importantly, the news from the head coach yesterday, from the manager coming out of Seattle, was
Scott Servais, yeah.
Originally, he said when he was injured, might be a month to 2 months.
He's already started working out.
Yeah, now they're talking, you know, this could be a lot shorter. I'm going to be cautiously optimistic here, though. I want to see that happen first. I do think, from how the injury looked, it would be a little while. But, hey, Gregory Polanco got caught off the field.
Played 3 days later.
You never know. Eduardo Rodriguez had talking about season-ending surgery yesterday. Wow. And then a few hours later, I'm hearing he's getting ready to throw a flat ground already.
It's so weird.
Yeah. Hey, this Gene Segura story was broken by Hector Gomez of Z101 in the Dominican Republic.
All right.
Good job by him.
Good job by Hector.
Is Z101 Sports Talk? Or
like Z100's brother.
Or it's like Z100's brother.
I don't know.
Caldano gonna have us on it.
The Mariners.
Greg Sussman, executive de fantasía.
Don't be a star Santa Claus.
Probably just have Dan Martinez on it.
Yeah.
Seattle defeated Minnesota 12-3 last night. It was Jimmy Paxton, 5 innings, 5 hits, 3 runs, 3 walks, 4 strikeouts. ERA still at 1.69. For Minnesota, Hector Santiago did not last long. Boy. Robbie Cano hit his 11th homer. Kyle Seager with the 6th. Taylor Motter stole his 7th base of the year, while Brian Dozier goes deep for his 9th home run of the year for the Twinkies.
Watch for a change in that Minnesota rotation. Hector Santiago, who was doing it with Mirrors for a while, over his last 6 starts, 0-5 with a 10.41 ERA.
Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't get to really watch much of the Paxton start. But he got it done. The thing is, the guy that people should be targeting, if you can get him, is Brian Dozier. Because if you look back a year ago, he was batting just at like 200 or just over that. He maybe had like a handful of homers and just a couple of steals. Now he's got, 9 homers, 8 steals. So he's almost like 10-10. And this is a guy that I do like going forward. We saw what he did from like July on last year. So he's a guy that gets it done. He's a proven player, as Corey would say.
Back in the baseball card.
Let me ask you this, though. Just throw this out there. Maybe it's like a devil's advocate kind of thing. What was the reason you felt he turned it on like in July last year?
Well, I mean, I looked at
was
his
it an adjustment or something?
Well, he's always had power. I think the batted ball profile, I think that if you look at it, I think it's the ESPN home run tracker. That left field porch for him is nice. He pulls the ball, and he can hit the home runs over there. For right-handers in target field, it's a lot better for power. So, and another thing in Minnesota, when it gets in it's cold as hell in the winter, but it gets really hot in the summertime. So once things start warming up, I didn't think he was going to hit 42 home runs. I was hoping from 28, maybe low 30s, like 32 tops. So, I mean, right now he's got 9. Everybody's hitting home runs. So, I still think he's got a good 20 left.
The New York Mets did not get a good pitching performance last night because Jake DeGrom, for the 2nd game
Jesus
in a row,
Christ.
Got destroyed. 4 innings, 10 hits, 8 runs. Only struck out 2 last night, which was a concern for me. Walked 2, and this stuff has just been very hittable, Scotty.
Yeah, that was arguably the worst start of his career.
Yeah.
And he's given up 15 runs and 4 home runs in
awful.
His last 2 starts. This was the one guy that was pitching really, really good for them. Like, Wheeler's pitching pretty good considering the circumstances. But, this was the guy that they were expecting, like, okay, here's the one guy we can count on. And he was very, very disconsolate at some point, to the point where Terry Collins had to come over and comfort him. at one point. You know?
Coach, I'm sorry, Coach. I'm sorry.
Stop it, goddammit. Send you down to AAA, all right? Just but get a hold.
I'm trying to do the best I can, Coach.
Get goddamn hold of yourself. You'll be doing the best you can down to AAA, all right?
I don't want to go to AAA, though.
Here's the
but
thing.
But like with DeGrom, it's like, you know, the last two starts, like, he's saying, you know, he feels good physically. When sometimes when you see starts like this, you wonder if the guy is hurt.
Yeah.
But he says everything feels all right physically, but if the front end's flying open, I'm not getting the location, you know, things like that. But still, I got to wonder, you know, it would not shock me, and I'm going to come out and say it, if today or later today, all of a sudden,
going for MRI.
They're talking about a six-man rotation, and you got Mats and Lugo coming back this weekend, Jacob DeGrom DL.
Yeah, I mean, I think you make a good point there, a possible 10-day DL. But I'm going to look at it as, if you don't believe he's injured and you think it's a mechanical thing,
bye.
I mean, the hard hit has been pretty nasty the last couple of starts. He's been getting hit hard. Like I said, 4 homers in 8 innings, 15 runs. But hey, I still like this guy.
Hey, the good news is that Terry didn't leave him out to throw 1,000 pitches.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like the Mets' solution every time is we're going to do a 6-man rotation. That's their magical wand that they wave.
Mets fell to a game started by their former opening day starter, Dylan G, last night.
Yeah, you know? I mean, that was so disheartening. I was here last night as the game was going on, so I really couldn't pay attention to it. But I was just like, you know, it was such an opportunity for DeGrom.
They had 5 home runs and they still lost because they didn't get the pitching from DeGrom.
Good.
Joey Gallo's 17th home run of the season last night and up over 200.
I'm about to say, what's his batting average?
204. Oh, OBP 100 points higher, 305.
Oh, that's not bad.
I mean, that would be terrible. It's not good. It's still over 100 points, which is better than average. Nomar Mazara, his 7th of the year. Scotty, I know you're a big Nomar Mazara guy. Mm-hmm. 289, 354
you
OBP.
You and George Kurtz.
Okay. What's the question?
I was like, you're feeling good where you're at with Nomar Mazara right now?
Yeah, very, okay. Very, very solid young hitter. Good plate discipline, good eye.
Okay. For the Mets, all these home runs last night, they couldn't do anything with them. Juan Lagares hit his 2nd of the year, while Asdrubal Cabrera hit his 4th. Neil Walker with his 8th. Curtis Granderson with his 5th. Travis d'Arnaud with his 6th. And they still lost!
Yeah, and those last two came in the last inning off of Matt Bush.
Yeah.
Bush was really upset when he got the final out. He took the ball and he emphatically threw it down on the mound.
Yeah, he was pissed. Yeah. He got 3 runs
by the way,
in that 9th inning.
By the way, did you see the end of the Nationals game last night?
I saw the highlight of it this morning.
With Coda Glover striking out Yasiel Puig, and the two of them have had words, and there was almost a brawl.
Yeah, Yasiel Puig.
Puig's always getting into something.
Yeah, it wasn't Coda Glover's fault. By the way, Max Scherzer, 7 innings, 14 strikeouts. I think he had 11 through 4.
Yeah, and that's his 55th. Double-digit strikeout game, the most of any active player.
He's the best. Clayton Kershaw, who pitches today for the Dodgers. That's why Chris Sale is 3rd, in my opinion.
I had Scherzer last week when I put my rest of the season rankings. I put Scherzer 2nd.
Yeah.
And I love Sale. But, I mean, his last 50 innings, 74 strikeouts, 11 walks.
Brandon McCarthy, 7 innings, 3 hits, 2 runs. He pitched really well, too. Struck out 4. Trey Turner stole 2 more bases yesterday, up to 18 now on the year.
Yes.
Crazy.
The last place team in GST is trying really hard to sell Trey Turner right now.
Yes, they are.
They won a lot for him, I'll say that.
Yes, they are.
They turned out like a 3 big player package, I think, from the first place team yesterday.
By the way, the other New York team, the Yankees, they lost last night to the Red Sox 5-4. Chris Carter swung at a pitch that tried to hit him in the face, and he swung at it with 2 on against Craig Kimbrell.
With one hand.
I threw the remote last night. That's how angry I was. We'll come back. We'll be joined by Dr. A of Inside Injuries. Stick around. The Roto Experts continues on after this.
Gonna give us more than that, Scott.
Roto Experts in the Morning, Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Wednesday 9:25 in the AM, which means it is time to welcome in Dr. A of Inside Injuries. Doc, what's happening?
How are you guys doing this morning?
We're doing very, very well, Doc. How's it going on your end?
I'm doing very good, very good.
Fantastic. And I want to start off this morning in regards to the guy that got the big contract extension, yes, this morning as well. It's a hell of a morning for Jeannie Segura. Segura, 5 years, $70 million. He's currently on the disabled list with a high ankle sprain. And for Segura, who got paid, now he's probably itching to come back. How soon will it be until we see him back on the field?
Yeah, the key word here is high ankle sprain. If it was a low ankle sprain, the trajectory is very predictable. The problem with high ankle sprains is that they tend to recur very, very easily if the player comes back too quickly. And that's why, you know, you always hear stuff like, oh, he could come back tomorrow or he could come back in 2 months. So our optimal recovery time for a grade one ankle sprain, a high ankle sprain, which is good. It's not a grade two high ankle sprain. It's about 4 weeks. So it looks like if they rest him about 4 weeks, let it heal, his chance of having a recurrent injury will be a lot lower. So right now I would expect about 4 weeks. If you see him come out sooner, be very careful. You may see a recurrent injury.
Doc, what's up, fantasy executive? What's the latest on Mike Trout?
Okay, so he had surgery for that grade 3 torn ulnar collateral ligament. I don't know if you guys have heard. They said they had to repair a little bit of the dorsal capsule, which is not uncommon. It's not going to extend his time on the DL because of that. Still looking at 8 weeks. He should be, if his rehab goes okay, surgery was good. Not a significant amount of secondary damage, which can happen sometimes when you go in and operate, you find other things. But in this particular case, just some minor damage to the dorsal capsule. They repaired it. Now he just has to undergo rehab. It will take, again, about 8 weeks fully, but then he should be good to go without any setbacks.
But it's interesting. Trout says he wants to be back by the All-Star break, which is mid-July, which I think, if my math is correct, is about 6 weeks. If he rushes back, is he more likely to get himself re-injured with this thumb injury, or is it a pain tolerance thing?
No, it's both. It's both. It's pain. It's a fine-tuned muscle. I mean, our thumb is like, it's the most important finger in the body, man. Like, you can't eat a sandwich without a thumb, but think about playing baseball with a thumb injury. So it's both. It's pain, but also, if you don't allow that ligament to heal and the dorsal capsule to heal properly, you know, if he comes back before 8 weeks, our algorithms will not have him back at low injury risk. He will be elevated. So that's very, very key. If he comes back right after the All-Star break, right after it, he still has another few weeks before he should come back. So he should come back about 2 weeks after the All-Star break.
Doc, Eduardo Rodriguez goes on the DL with, what I've seen is a right knee subluxation, which he injured while falling in the bullpen. It's kind of like, from what I understand, and maybe Corey can confirm this, is where it's like you almost have a dislocated kneecap. Now, originally it said timeline 3 to 4 weeks, but then there was talk of possible season-ending surgery. But then yesterday I'm hearing that he's ready to flow off flat ground. So what's going on with E-Rod here?
Subluxation, Scott. That's good.
Yeah. Again, they're telling us all these indirect findings. So, like, a subluxation is either an injury to one of the ligaments that hold the patella together, or it's an ACL or MCL sprain. The reason why James Andrews is saying that he could be shut down for 3 weeks or season-ending surgery is that after you're shut down, letting it heal to see if it subluxes again. If it does, that means it's too weak, and so it has to be repaired so that it becomes stronger. So likely, you're right, it's like a patellar subluxation because it's very, very difficult to sublux the actual big knee joint. But that's what's happening. So he needs to be shut down for 4 weeks. Our ORT is saying 4 weeks. If it stabilizes because of healing, then he'll be good to go. If it still lacks and it's allowing the knee to sublux a little bit, he's going to have to be shut down to be repaired.
Hey, Doc, I got a guy who was a fantasy darling in the preseason, but I don't know if he's ever coming back, so maybe you could help us out here. David Dahl of the Colorado Rockies. I heard recently he was shut down again.
Yep. So he's again, it's stuff that the team is not really telling us, you know. So that's the beauty of our algorithm. Likelihood, we've already tagged it. You know, when a guy has a grade 2 rib injury in March and still is back not on the field after about 3 to 4 weeks, He's likely had a setback. He tried to pitch, re-aggravated it. The team is likely not telling that. So we've actually put him in for a re-aggravated grade 2 rib injury. And so he's got, you know, likelihood he's trying to pitch. He's in incredible amount of pain. Not sure if he has an underlying rib fracture, but nevertheless, he's still about another 4 to 5 weeks away, our algorithm is saying.
We're talking to Dr. A from Inside Injuries, and he's just giving you the latest there on David Dahl. Download the Inside Injuries app. Read the Inside Injuries columns all the time at rotoexperts.com. And I definitely have my doubts whether David Dahl will ever make it back as well, by the way, just for the record. Hey, Doc, I had a question here on Justin Bour, because Justin Bour is someone that was one of the hotter hitters in baseball. And, well, he then, of course, sprained his ankle as well, and out for a couple of days, now on the 10-DL. Don Mattingly and the Marlins are saying we expect him back as soon as those 10 days are up. Should us fantasy owners expect him back when those 10 days are up?
Yes. He has a grade 1 left foot bone bruise. I don't know if you guys ever had a bone bruise. It is one of the most painful things you've ever been through. But usually about 7 days, the edema and fluid in the bone goes away. You know, our ORT right now is 1 week, which is exactly sort of like within the 10-day DL time frame. You know, he was, you know, it will definitely bring him back to low injury risk and peak health if he is out for 1 week, which is what they're saying. To answer your question, yes, he should be back after the 10-day DL, and he should be at low injury risk again.
Seems like there's good news on Jameson Taillon recently, Doc. When are you expecting him back on the mound?
Yeah, so the good news, remember we talked about him, and the biggest thing was is whether they discovered the cancer and it was contained and they could just operate and then that's it, and he didn't need chemo. And the good news is it looks like they did that and he doesn't need chemo. And so now it's just a matter of getting his strength back. And that's an incredible story, you know, to get back onto the mound. He's still probably about, you know, 4 to 6 weeks away from regaining complete strength. But again, you know, once he gets his complete strength back, he should be 100% good to go. He's at low injury risk, obviously, and above average right now, but peak health in about 6 weeks.
I'm going to stay in the outfield with Cameron Maben, who had a magnificent May, but always seems to find his way onto the DL. What's the prognosis on him?
Yeah, and so this is one of the guys before the season started. You know, he was at elevated injury risk and below average in the draft, and you know we warned everybody about him. And he immediately went to high injury risk after his first injury. You know, he's had 4 injuries, obviously. You guys know this, you know, already in this season. And we've had him at high injury risk throughout every single injury. And, you know, the team just keeps bringing him back, even though our ORT is saying 3 weeks here, 4 weeks here. He's coming back in 5 days and 1 week, and he continues to re-injure himself, continues to re-injure. So he's at high injury risk right now, grade 1 oblique muscle contusion. It's 2 weeks. However, because of the way he played in last year and all these other injuries, he will not get back down to elevated injury. He will be at high injury risk the whole year. And so this is a player, unfortunately, if you can replace him on your roster, you should.
Dr. A, final question, because we're not allowed to contractually obligated to ask you a Met question every week without letting you go. And that's Yoenis Cespedes. Cespedes has been out for over a month with hamstring issues and quad issues and soft tissue issues up the wazoo. Is Cespedes coming back anytime soon?
Well, you know, our algorithm has been saying this all along about how his whole life cycle of his injuries transpired, brought him back too early. Now, again, compensatory injuries, he has a grade 1 quad strain, which is essentially a significant setback. And so, you know, right now we're looking at a combination of the grade 2 hamstring strain that he's trying to recover from and a grade 1 quad strain. It's about another 6 weeks right now. He'll remain probably at elevated to high injury risk the rest of the year. Great player, But obviously you can't see his talent if he's not on the field, and this is what it is. I mean, you know, he's significantly high injury prone this year because he came back too early and because he, you know, re-aggravated the same body part over and over again.
And there you go. Dr. Ray from Inside Injuries. You could hear him each and every Wednesday morning on the Roto Experts in the morning, 9:25 a.m. Eastern Time. Doc, we appreciate the time as always.
Thanks a lot, guys. Talk to you next week.
Absolutely. I just read this stat, by the way. Is this the diamond, the Jay-Z diamond that you're doing?
That's an A for Dr. A.
Oh, yes. It looked like the Jay-Z diamond. Anyway, I just read this statistic from Joel Sherman. The Mets are 12.5 games out of first in the NL East. Of course, Scott said he probably out of reach in the division, but you got to believe, of course, you know, in the mix for the wild card. 12.5 games out of first place in the NL East, 3 games out of the worst record in all of baseball.
Yes.
It was interesting what he said about Cespedes another 6 weeks. Last week, Terry Collins was saying he's going to be back in another week.
Well, Terry Collins is a liar, as we've constantly been
told. Better watch your mouth.
I'm a damn liar, Cespedes.
Yes, sir.
When I punch you in your Justin Bieber face, I ain't going to be a goddamn liar. All right?
You can punch me wherever you want, Terry, but then I'll see you and make a lot of money.
Make a lot of money. From the hospital bed.
That's fine. I'll still make money. We'll come back. We'll preview the Roto Experts Exclusive Edge package today. Brandon Munchison, it is up next here on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Song, Scotty, as you're jamming out?
No, but I like the guitar.
It's not really a jam out song with the whole mouth out, believe me.
Doesn't sound like it, but no. The guitar is kind of grooving.
It's Third Eye Blind. You're going too much into it with the mouth. It's just very nice.
It's a simple guitar,
very
Scott.
Simple.
Yeah, it's a
I'll
simple
never
guitar.
Let you go. Just keep going. Very simple. There you go.
No, yeah, but sometimes you got to do the mouth because that's just the way like a guitarist feels the music.
Not all guitarists.
You don't explain it. You can't explain it. It's.
I think Greg should do the vocals and you should.
Have you ever been a guitarist, Greg?
Have I ever been a guitarist?
Yes.
I have actually played a real guitar. Yes.
Oh really?
Yes.
Scott, have you ever played a real guitar?
No. But when you watch all the famous rock guitarists and you know the guys that laid it all down, it's like, whoa. Especially you watch Hendrix. Hendrix always doing something with his face and his mouth. You know what I'm saying?
Can we put the headphones on Danny Ogres for a second? Because Danny Ogres is plays guitar in a band.
Yeah, Danny Ogres is a real.
Danny Ogres plays guitar in a band.
It's a real
so now me, I've tried to play a guitar and it just you know I try my best. I don't do very well. Scott plays the air guitar and he's trying to be Jimi Hendrix up here. I'm just trying to play the Third Eye Blind guitar, like the Ed Sheeran, where he just you know does this thing. Now, Danny Ogres, you are on stage. You play guitar on stage. Do you do the scout mouth while you play?
I don't think I've ever done that.
For a real live guitarist.
Just because Danny doesn't do it, though, doesn't mean it's applicable, though.
But it doesn't applicable.
Watch Jimi Hendrix. Watch Jimmy Page.
Wait.
You know, watch
you
guys
think Third
like
Eye
that.
Blind is trying to be Jimmy Page?
No.
Okay, so that's my point. So that song didn't need the face.
I think it depends on who the guitarist is. What if a guy in a band like that is influenced by, say, you know, a classic rock guitarist?
They'd probably be in a different band.
You know, different people feel music different ways.
I'd say they'd probably be in a different band. That's all. That's all. Danny Ogres, I appreciate
No, but you
time.
Would always point out, like, why are you doing the face when they play heavy metal? Like,
well, heavy metal's different. That wasn't heavy metal.
Like classic rock. Like
I understand. You know? I understand that. I'm just talking about, like, that was not, obviously
yeah,
not
it's
heavy.
A simple
you know.
Strum.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
It was kind of grooving, though. I like the guitar.
You like a Third Eye Blind?
Yeah, but that's from, like, you know, 90s, you know,
yes.
stuff like that. But
yes.
I kind of yes. grooving on that.
That was late 90s. That's right. Yeah. All right, let's get into Brandon Murchison's article here that you can find inside the Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package, which is available 1 week from today. 1 week. RotoExperts.com. We are previewing an article a day here on the program. Today, it is Brandon Murchison's training camp battles. And I want to begin in New York. Because that's where we started the show. It's where we're going to end the show. And it's with the New York Jets. I mentioned Matt Forte. He's going to get caught. You guys all said, no, I don't think so.
No, I can see it happen.
By you guys, I mean Corey.
Well.
Corey said he doesn't think he gets cut. And if he doesn't get cut, that means, once again, we have Matt Forte versus Bilal Powell. How do you, fantasy executive, because you're the one person here that doesn't think Matt Forte gets cut, how do you think that shakes out?
I think it shakes out with Bilal Powell wrestling the starting jobs at some point in the season. You may see them started off as a 50-50 timeshare, but I think Powell is the better player at this stage in his career. Like what he can do catching the football, so you don't lose that part of Matt Forte's game. So I think that we may start off with a timeshare, but I think by the time we get rolling into the month of October and such, I think that Bilal Powell will clearly be the lead dog in the New York Jets. A lot of his value is going to come from catching the football, though, because the Jets will be playing from behind.
Brandon Merchant said, quote, even though Forte spent a chunk of time last season injured, Powell simply outperformed him and was the better back. He's a better pass-catching back between currently the two of them, giving him the edge in PPR formats. Although this battle began as a running back by committee, look for Powell to gain control of the RB1 job and run with it.
Yeah, I can see it happening. Everything that's said here is, you know, made a lot of sense. But again, I wouldn't be surprised if the Jets got rid of Forte with this purge, you know, that they're going through here. I think Powell's the guy I want in fantasy either way, whether Forte's there or he isn't.
Yeah, I mean, Powell has the ability to be a top 20 PPR back. Matt Forte, maybe barely a top 40 back.
Yeah, it's Matt Forte. Sorry.
I do think Powell does need somebody to share the load with him there, but he'll catch the ball a lot. As long as they don't overwork him, Powell strikes me as the type of guy that every time he touches the ball, he can do something with it. Just don't overwork the guy, and he'll be fine. You got a problem? You're looking at me in my face?
Oh, what the hell is wrong with you, Scott?
What's wrong with you?
I don't have no beef with you. I'm looking at something. I'm looking at my damn
telephone
ringing.
You're looking
over
my mug like you want to do something.
Scott, don't get
yeah,
you.
Yeah, all right.
What's beef when you need two guys to go to sleep?
There you go.
Another training camp battle that Brandon acknowledges inside his article is Christian McCaffrey and Jonathan Stewart. And Scott, I want to start here with you on this one, because we've talked about Christian McCaffrey, and every time we do it, I bring up Jonathan Stewart, and you're like, listen, I'm not messing with this Jonathan Stewart thing anymore. So it's not a thing that you have the Christian McCaffrey 8th overall. Like, I'm not worried about Jonathan Stewart, who's old, who's always injured, so on and so forth. Brandon brings it up, and I'll read Brandon's comments on it in just a moment. But why don't you tell everybody why you're not concerned about Jonathan Stewart?
I think Christian McCaffrey is like an electric all-around back that's really going to this was the perfect draft pick, I felt, for the Carolina Panthers. They need a jolt, a real playmaker on that offense, a difference maker. This guy reminds me of LeSean McCoy with his certain cutback moves and his versatility. I feel like he's going to be able to score anywhere on the field. Yeah, Stewart might be there, like, to, you know, have some goal line carries, but then you also got Cam and stuff like that. To me, Christian McCaffrey's like the present and the future for the Carolina Panthers.
Brandon says, Jonathan Stewart comes in as the incumbent and may not be ready to relinquish the job just yet. We all know what we're getting from Stewart at this point. Power back with no agility and injury concerns. He will maintain a hold on this job early on, making him worthy of a RB3 or RB4 consideration. Matt?
I think Carolina's, you know, it's a changing of the guard there with McCaffrey, as Scott said. I think it was, you know, an excellent pick for what they want to do. Drafting Samuel as well, it's going to be a different dynamic. Greg Olsen is still going to be the man as far as pass catches. I do not like either of their wide receivers in Benjamin or Funchess. So I think those are the three guys that I first mentioned will be the core of that offense.
Corey, where is Jonathan Stewart going in drafts right now?
Oh, Jonathan Stewart is going very late. The Christian McCaffrey hype is all over the place. Everybody kind of just not really thinks but knows that he's going to be the guy, not really paying much attention to Stewart in drafts right now. I mean, Stewart played 16 last year and didn't even put up 1,000 yards, and he got the football a lot. So I think Stewart is popped. He's washed. I'm looking at a draft board right now. I'm in round 12. I see guys like Amir Abdullah gone, Frank Gore is gone, Matt Forte is gone, Kareem Hunt, James White, Kenneth Dixon, still yet no one
Kareem
has.
Kareem Hunt that late?
Kareem Hunt went in the 10th. Nobody has yet to take a snag on one Jonathan Stewart. I think we feel like as if his run has come
Kareem
to an
Hunt
end.
Kareem Hunt in the 10th?
I'll tell you what.
That's good value.
If you're telling me Jonathan Stewart's going like the 12th round, 12th, 13th round.
Did that one make you holler?
I'm in, man.
I've seen some early NFFC drafts.
He went in the 14th
draft,
round. Oh, no, that's Jonathan Williams.
I've seen some early NFFC drafts, though, where I feel like people aren't totally buying in on McCaffrey, though. It's like they're even taking Mixon ahead of McCaffrey.
That makes sense to me.
I like Mixon, but I feel like McCaffrey's more versatile and like more of a big play weapon.
I would take Mixon over McCaffrey.
Corey?
I'd really like Christian McCaffrey. But I can't, if somebody was to take Mixon over him, I couldn't fault him. But I would go McCaffrey.
I like Mixon, but I feel like McCaffrey's going to be the bigger play and more versatile guy.
The only thing that scares me with Mixon is that suspect offensive line. Mm-hmm. But he is going to lead the Bengals in touches.
I don't think there's any issue with that. That's my thing.
What kind of role does Giovanni Bernard play now?
ACL?
Well, how about this? Mixon is a hybrid of Giovanni Bernard and Jeremy Hill. So you got those two guys in one.
Exactly.
And if it wasn't for the off-field issues, he would have been a first-round pick.
Yep.
There would have been no issue about that. I mean, there would have been no... he would have went early. He went in the second round due to that, you know. So, I mean, and the other rookie, Leonard Fournette, to me, is a guy that I have to really like. I think he's my number 10 back. I think I have to put him at number 10 because the floor is 250 carries. It's possible 300 carries. He is going to get the goal line carries. He is going to be the focal point of that offense. They are committed to making it to Leonard Fournette. Don't listen to all. He's still got to learn. He's still got to earn his spot. That's total BS.
He got to get a sticker on his helmet.
Yeah, that's total BS. They made the commitment. And if you want a bell cow, this is your, you know, bell cow guy right here.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be any T.J. Yeldon talk anymore.
Third down back, T.J. Yeldon.
What about Chris Ivory?
The fact is, what makes me very more into Mixon than Christian McCaffrey is that we spoke about Jonathan Stewart just a second ago, Brandon Merchant's article. You'll be able to read it inside the Exclusive Edge package. And that is Jonathan Stewart's going to have a role. And it's just not going away. He's going to have a role in this offense, probably a goal line back of some sort, just around. And Christian McCaffrey's going to be utilized everywhere. I get it. Joe Mixon is going to have the goal line role. He's going to be the first two downs. Even if Gio Vera goes back healthy, he'll be the third down guy, and that's fine. Joe Mixon's ultimately become the every down back here. Christian McCaffrey right now is splitting time with Jonathan Stewart. That's why I like Mixon better than McCaffrey.
Andy Dalton said it best. He goes, when Joe Mixon's on the field, it's a good thing because teams don't know what we're going to do.
If exactly.
We're going to pass, run.
Christian McCaffrey's going to score from anywhere on the field.
It also bothers me, and I know it may not bother you, Scotty, but I've seen it before with other teams, and like we may not think it's a big deal. But remember, when you go to Stanford and Oregon, their semesters are on the schedule. They can't practice yet. So Christian McCaffrey hasn't practiced yet with Carolina. And I know, like, listen, he's at a whole training camp, but I remember back
for
certain players, they are installing the offense right now, and he's not able to participate in that. I know it doesn't sound like a big deal. I would like him to be
there. He can't do online classes.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has to. He's not able to do it until he finishes the semester. He's not able to participate.
All right.
Because remember, you have to finish your junior year.
Yeah.
Technically. So, very interesting thoughts there on Christian McCaffrey and Joe Mixon. Of course, stuff we will talk about for the next several months, and you can read about inside the Roto Experts Exclusive Edge Package. We're going to wrap things up now. We'll find out what's up next in the OGs, and we'll finish off the Eric Ebron conversation that we started off last hour. That's it. We'll be done 5 minutes away. Stick around. The Roto Experts continues and then finishes next. Final couple minutes here on the Roto Experts in the morning. And we ended hour number one before Roto Experts at the park talking about Eric Ebron, Corps. And you said you're loving Eric Ebron this year.
Yeah.
He sold 61 catches in just 13 games last season.
Yeah.
What I thought you failed to mention was the one touchdown.
Well, yeah. Well, that's going to be an issue. That's an issue for that offense, period. Golden Tate don't score no touchdowns. Jones don't score touchdowns. Ebron don't score touchdowns. Can't get on the damn field. So they got to figure out the touchdown thing. But listen, when people talk about touchdowns, you can't predict touchdowns. I can predict receptions.
Yeah, but I think Anquan Boldin
He was the guy that really took...
I think he'll be back.
That is a possibility, but who's the kid that they're talking up? Galladay? I'm trying to remember his name. They're saying he'll be the number three. So give me a minute.
You're here for another hour for old school facts.
Somebody's got to catch touchdown passes.
I agree. I'm just worried. Listen, Eric Ebron's never played more than 14 games.
How many touchdowns did he have 2 years ago?
He had five.
Five, yeah. And how many games?
14. Yeah. 47 receptions for 537 and 5. Listen, the number of yards have gone up every year. I'm concerned he's going to miss three games or so, and we've lost Corey.
Who's this one? She knew?
I don't know.
if Bolden's not there, and there's a significant chance he won't be, you know, somebody's got to catch touchdowns. I got to think, even though he had one touchdown last year, that maybe Ebron gets another chance to reclaim that role.
I'm not even tripping off Ebron. He's going to get touchdowns. He's going to get catches. He's going to get touchdowns. He's going to finish as a wide receiver one.
What I've seen from the beat writers is it's pretty much they're saying the number three wide receiver will be Kenny Golladay.
Who the hell is Kenny Golladay?
From Northern Illinois.
Yes, of course. Sure, Jake Seeley knows who that is. All right. Corey.
Yo.
What's coming up next on Old School Fantasy?
Old School Fantasy, we're going to do a little ADP roulette. Maybe we'll get the Ducks out here. Get that over there. We'll go through my fantasy league MFL 10 ADPs. I'll have the gentleman pick a number, and then we'll discuss the player accordingly. Also go over some of the top stories. Obviously, the want to get into the situation with Eric Decker, kind of see what the guys think about that and if he has anything left in the tank.
Yeah, absolutely. And Eric Decker, the TV just went off in here, so now it's all spooky. But Eric Decker, interesting conversation. Where will he land? I know yesterday was interesting. His wife was tweeting he hopes that they're not next. She hopes that they're not next. And all of a sudden, a couple hours later, it did come out that they will trade or release Eric Decker before it is all said and done by the end of the week. And we mentioned Detroit could be a fit. They're talking up Drew Holiday over there as their third wide receiver. So, you know, maybe Eric Decker's a fit there. He's a fit for someone. He that's a guy that can score touchdowns. We're talking about guy.
Oh, no, Eric Decker.
Eric Decker can score touchdowns.
Eric Decker knows how to find a
strike. He'd be a nice replacement for Anquan Boldin.
He would be a very nice replacement for Anquan Boldin. So, Corey and Matt and George, they'll get more into that over the next hour here on the Old School Fantasy Hour, the OGs. But that is going to do it for us here on the Roto Experts in the Morning. It has been a bit of a fun morning. I want to thank Dr. Ray,
yep,
Inside Injuries, for joining us, of course. We will be back tomorrow morning.
Hey, do his wife have a
reality show?
Yeah.
I think she did, but I think they kind of nixed that. It used to be they had something on E! Together.
Well, they had a reality show, the two of them. She was also a country singer, is a country singer.
Well, I think I wanted to be a country singer or something. My mom didn't like Eric Decker.
When she looks like that, she can be whatever she wants.
He could be a Ram.
A Ram, that's possible.
That would make some sense.
A Ram would absolutely be possible.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people who don't want Eric Decker.
I think it's all about health. You're going to have to pass the physical.
Yeah, you got
to
bring him in there.
I know the doctors have deemed him healthy.
Passed him, but that's just to get caught.
They had the same doctor. They shared the doctors Mets. With the Mets. Yeah. Like, yeah, he's fine.
I can't lift my arm.
Hey, and by the way, speaking of wide receivers that have been cut, Jeremy Maclin on the recruiting channel today, Corey.
Yeah, Jeremy Maclin spending day number two in Buffalo. Hasn't got to Baltimore yet. I think they wrap it up.
According to Snapchat by LeSean McCoy. That is going to do it for us here on the Roto Experts. Remember, the OGs are up next. We'll be back tomorrow morning, 8 a.m. Eastern, for another edition of the Roto Experts in the Morning. Have a fantastic hump day afternoon. And we'll see you tomorrow. For Matt Modica, for Corey Parsons, and for the King, Scott Engel. My name is Greg Sussman. Listen to the OGs. Don't go away. We'll be back. Have a great one, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.